Okay, we'll open up the House Committee on Rules and Public Affairs today, July 17, 2003. And colleagues, it looks like today we will follow the schedule. We do not have introduction of speaker-approved bills, but we'll go straight to the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3648, then take up House Joint Memorial 10. And that should finish us up for the day. So with that, let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 3648. And Representative Backlund.
Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I'll just stay here.
That's fine. Yeah. Absolutely.
Colleagues, House Bill 3648 is a renewal of a bill we passed earlier this session, House Bill 2130. We passed it, and it was signed by the governor into law in April. Unfortunately, we've discovered some glitches in that law, and so we're trying to fix it. And I guess that would be a good beginning point. And we have brought or asked a number of people to come in today and talk to us, testify to us about our hope for a fix. And I would. Janet, if it's okay to ask, we start with our legislative assistant, Gary Pillow.
Is that okay, Janet? Gary Pillow?
Chair Doyle and members of the Rules and Public Affairs Committee, for the record, my name is Gary Pillow. I am legislative assistant to Representative Backlund. I'm here today to try to give you a brief history leading up to House Bill 3648. During the years of 1998-99, there were efforts made by local governments to separate retirees of local government units from the active staff for health care coverage. I happened to be involved in that coming out of Salem Kaiser Schools, and there were others, both cities and school districts, that were making this kind of effort. And so that led to the passage of House Bill 2084 in the 2001 session. I might just stop there and point out that the efforts to separate retirees was already in violation of the statute, which was ORS 243.303, and our whole effort since then has been to clarify that statute. So this measure from 2001 session amended ORS 243.303, which has a history dating back into the 1980s. House Bill 2084 attempted to clarify the statute by saying that not only could retirees of local governments not be separated from actives for health care coverage, but that the coverage had to be the same and the rates or premiums had to be set for certain categories, singles, married, and those with dependents. During the interim, more problems developed in interpreting this language. Problems arose everywhere, for the retirees, for the insurers trying to apply the language. I just might point out that in the committee that year, a former legislator who is now a city councilman up in Portland was the one who really wanted the language providing for tiered rates for retirees, and that led to considerable difficulty. Consequently, we are now at this point. We have House Bill 2130 signed by the governor this past April 23rd. That bill was a further effort to clarify the statute. And rather than get into more of the detail, I would feel more comfortable deferring to some of the people from the industry and from local governments who are here today to help explain what problems have developed as a result of 2130 and the need for House Bill 3648. But I would be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions?
Colleagues, I might add that Gary has spent a large amount of his time working on this, meetings, phone calls, discussions between he and I. It's been an interesting experience. I use the word interesting loosely here in this case.
I might add that we had a large work group end of January. It was during session, and Representative Backlund couldn't be there, so I coordinated that effort. And just as a note of how difficult this is, we had representatives of the industry, of OEA, of the insurance division. They're here again today. We worked through this, and we thought we had the proper language, resulting in House Bill 2130. Well, obviously, that language has caused more difficulty. That same work group met this week, coming up now with 3648. So we're very hopeful now that this will work, at least for this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Mylea Christensen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mylea Christensen. I'm the administrator of the Public Employees Benefit Board, and I've been invited here this afternoon just to speak briefly on PEB's experience with retiree benefits and answer any of your questions. Very briefly, as many of you know, PEB covers approximately 110,000 members. That includes active state employees, retirees, and their family members. PEB and its predecessor boards have offered the retirees who leave state service the option of continuing with PEB benefits until they become Medicare eligible. During the last 4 years, we have offered retirees the same benefits that we offer other state employees and their dependents. The board has continued to be very concerned, as are most purchasers of health care, about the marketplace and recognize that the majority of retirees fully pay their monthly premiums. PEB has approximately 3,200 retirees who are currently enrolled on our program. The board has considered a number of factors over the last several years. We know, for example, that retiree utilization is somewhat higher. We also know that nationally many employers are struggling with providing retiree coverage, and we also know that the cost increases are significant and projected to be 10 to 30% for 04. For PEB, the decisions for 04 have already been made, and they are in brief. All retirees will continue to receive full access to all the benefits that PEB offers to active employees. This includes three programs that are designed specifically for part-time and retiree employees and retirees. Those include the Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, Kaiser, and an ODS dental plan. By choice, the PEB board pools all active employees and retirees, so that we put them all into one pool for the purposes of rating. And overall, the increases on these retiree plans for 2004 are between 9.65% and 11.93%. PEB's overall increase for 2004 is estimated at 9%. And again, I'll keep my comments very short and be delighted to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Any questions?
Mylea, thank you for coming in. Is it your experience with PEB that the rates for the retirees and the rates for the actives are pretty much the same, or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, again, PEB chooses to pool all of the groups together, and so we deliver basically a single set of rates. We charge slightly different administrative fees for COBRA retirees and for active employees, but in general, what the board has decided to do is to mutualize the rates between those groups. So there isn't a difference, for example, other than the contributions between those the retirees and the employees. There is a difference between the utilization experience of retirees and active employees, but the rates are kept the same.
Okay. Thank you. Leonard Hagan and Sarah Reeder, can you come forward together?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Leonard Hagan. I'm with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. And for the record, I do want to make it clear that the interest of Regents in House Bill 3648 is to help resolve continuing confusion that you've heard about already in testimony. And my comments are based upon several work group meetings also referenced by Gary Pello. I think when I go through, and I'll try to keep my comments brief, but it will be helpful to visualize, if you will, when we talk about groups. You heard Gary and Representative Backlund talk about there was a concern that retirees were separated from actives. And when we talk about rating a group, under ORS 243-303, what it says now after 2084, it really did two things, and I think one is very key. It's saying that when a local government creates a premium or a rate for employees, it includes retirees and actives in that same pool for rating and premium purposes. I believe I'm correct on this. In Washington State, they've done the opposite. They've said retirees will be separate, but the local government will make coverage available. Problem is, when you have retirees in a separate pool, the experience is much higher, and it's very difficult to even get coverage. So I think it really is key to bear in mind that 2084 did a great thing for retirees, and that's getting them into the same underwriting pool as active employees. Second thing 2084 did, and has already been touched on, it said that you couldn't charge a retiree more than or a higher premium than an active, and that a retiree be charged a category rate or based on status, single, single plus spouse, family. And with the combination of those two pieces in 2084, not no higher than plus this category rating, there was confusion about what rate you could really charge a retiree. And legislative council came out with an opinion letter that really in the final analysis under 2084 in the industry it was becoming clear that all we could use would be tiered or category for retirees. And I'm not sure if you're clear on when I'm talking about category or you'll hear unit or composite. When we're talking category rate, again, that's based on status. So if you're single, you're going to pay less of a premium than if you're married plus family, or married plus spouse, or family coverage would be higher. What a lot of local governments do, for administrative purposes and budgeting, they like to use what's called a unit or a composite rate. And this is usually for actives. And once you've developed your tiered rates, then you can say, okay, well, here's what a composite rate would be, charged to all employees regardless of status. So it makes it a nice, even number. And from what I've learned through this process, that's also a number that's critical to some collective bargaining agreements, et cetera. So the thought of not being able to use a composite or unit rate because of 2084 was creating all kinds of problems. So we sought the fix in 2130, and under 2130, the legislative intent there, I believe, was really same. Whenever you charge actives, you make the same charge to retirees. So it could be tiered, or category, or it could be composite. What happened this year with renewals coming up is kind of when rubber hits the road, so to speak. We found that for retirees that were tiered, but the local government wanted to continue composite rate for whatever reason on the actives, you had retirees going from tiered, which if you're single or single plus spouse, I'm just going to throw out some numbers, maybe $200 or $300. Now under 2130, same, you have composite for actives, they get bumped to a composite. A retiree goes from category to composite. We were seeing some retirees having premium increases in the $200 or $300 range to $500 or $600, maybe $700. So for those retirees, it was a real issue. And I have to tell you, it wasn't the retirees we were hearing from as an insurer. It was the local government saying, do you really have to do this? And we were saying, well, under 2130, that's the intent, and that's what we will do. Again, 2130, we're trying to get more flexibility and, again, help make it clear how you allocate the premiums. What you have here before you in 3648, and I think the public policy lesson that at least I've learned in this and I think is behind 3648, it's a good public policy decision to include retirees and actives for creating the group or the rating pool. But when you go to that next step and then tell a local government, here's how you have to allocate or charge that premium among your active and retiree populations, you start bumping into collective bargaining agreements and budgeting concerns. And while we've done it this way for years, why are you making us change now? And the essence of insurance is somebody in that group is going to subsidize somebody else, or we wouldn't need insurance. So again, when we go to that next level, I like to say, where we're legislating, here's how you will allocate the premium. You're always going to have some people that will be happy with it and some people will be upset. Some local governments will come out of the woodwork and say, we just can't do what you've asked us to do. So I think the policy decision behind 3648 is to give as much flexibility as possible to the local governments. So in 3648 and the amendment, -1, do you have the amendment?
Yep.
Okay. 3648 with the amendment, I believe, clarifies, and it's the hope that it clarifies, that the local government will include active and retirees in the same pool for creating the premium and rating purposes. The local government and or insurer, everybody in one pool. But when it comes down to how you allocate that out, that's the responsibility of the local government. That's, I think, the policy intent and the goal of 3648.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rager?
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Reeder, and I'm here today representing ODS Health Plans. Lynn Hagen has very eloquently explained from the beginning to where we are today with respect to the need for the change and the -1 amendment to the current bill before you, so I won't duplicate his comments. Only to echo the opinion of ODS Health Plans is that we do believe that the -1 amendments does provide the additional flexibility to local governments and also makes more clear the statute by which the carriers are to apply the provisions as well. So I will.
Okay. Questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And Maria Keltner.
Afternoon. I'm Maria Keltner. I'm representing the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties. And you wouldn't believe the calls I got after the bill passed from local government employers saying, we can't charge our retirees this way because we've been charging our employees, actives, on a composite basis and our retirees on a tiered basis, one party, two party, or family. And some of the memos that I got indicated that as much as $400 or $500 they would have to raise the retirees that they had been charging a single premium to bring them to the composite rate, and said we really prefer not to do this. So everyone that I've heard from in terms of the cities and counties has said we need 3648 with the -1 amendments, and so we do support straightening out the mandate of raising those rates. The other concern that was expressed was that a number of people wouldn't be able to afford that and would drop their coverage. So it's important that this gets passed fairly quickly because the renewals, most of them are August 1st. And people, employers didn't want to be caught in the bind of they didn't charge the higher rate, so people come back for higher rates from the insurance carriers, or that the retiree dropped their coverage because it was going to go up by $400, and then the law passes, and they could have stayed on, but now it's too late to get back on. So timing is critical.
Great.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Berger.
Maria, I guess more than a question. Well, this is a question. How can we prevent this kind of thing from happening in our process? You know, it costs money to get these bills processed and get them through the whole system, and here we have a bill. Where were we? Why weren't we talking about 2130 and the problems that it was going to present to local government during the process that it was being passed?
There are probably two reasons, maybe six, but two that I can mention. One is we weren't involved in the work group, so we didn't know that it was going on. And the other is that both AOC and LOC reviewed the health insurance bills through City County Insurance Services, who has only a three-tier rate that they offer. So they didn't see the implications for other cities and counties who aren't insured through City County Insurance Services. So it's kind of a combination of those two factors.
Okay.
And maybe five or six others.
But no, but that does explain one thing. Not that I'm pleased about that. But I think it does explain it. Thank you, Maria.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that concludes our public testimony, so we could close a public hearing on House Bill 3648 and open up a work session on House Bill 3648. And Representative Backman, we have dash one amendments.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair, we do. I move that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3648.
Representative Backman moves adoption of the dash one amendments to House Bill 3648. Any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I could only say that I appreciate the efforts that so many people have put into this whole thing, this whole issue, and certainly I am most anxious that it work.
Okay.
So anyway, I certainly support the dash ones.
Great. Any objection? Not so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that we... That I make a motion that we move House Bill 3648 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Backman has moved House Bill 3648 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Aye.
Excuse me.
Both sides.
Aye.
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 And chair votes aye, and with that unanimity, we consider the consent calendar for this bill. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And the bill will pass to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. And that concludes our work session on House Bill 3648. And we'll now open up a public hearing on HJM 10. And Representative Hobson is right on cue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What an entrance, huh? Would you like me to start, Mr. Chair, or was the administrator going to do an overview?
No, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Elaine Hobson, and I'm represented from District 32. And I come before you today to ask your support for House Joint Memorial Number 10. Senator Dukes is tied up in Ways and Means, or else she would be joining me as well. But we both appreciate your attention and interest in this, and thank you for letting us have the hearing. I'm really sorry that we find ourselves in a situation where this memorial is necessary and or appropriate, but that is where we are, and we need some impetus and support for the action that we feel is very warranted. As you all know, there was a very serious and disastrous accident at the mouth of the Tillamook Bay at the Port of Garibaldi. And a charter fishing boat, the Tacky 2, capsized, and that resulted in the death of 11 people, 9 of whom have been found and 2 are still missing. And that included a very experienced, well-known, and well-beloved captain as well. The circumstances and conditions precipitating this accident were far more representative of a winter storm than a balmy spring day. And as those of us living on the coast know, the combination of strong tidal conditions, such as the ebb tide that was there on that day, and heavy surf can provide really unpredictable boating conditions. However, this merely enunciates the importance of recognizing the unpredictability of the ocean and the need for measures to control the few factors over which we are able to offer some control. The reasons for the accident are many, but one factor is clear. The jetty is in need of continued maintenance and repair in order to maintain the control that we do have over the one factor that we can control. With constantly changing coastal conditions, we need to provide the best avenue possible for our boating population. The first jetty, actually, in this particular port, the Port of Garibaldi, was put in place in 1917. And obviously work has continued over the years. We aren't at that same state. And we now have a north and a south jetty that provides the opening that is used by the hundreds of boats that go to and fro from that particular bay. plans have been made to improve and the jetty and to provide more structure to those jetties. And this memorial is just reemphasizing and supports that plan that is before our federal delegation. And this memorial sends a strong message to our congressional delegation that we are in dire need of this support in order to continue our coastal activities. And these activities are so needed and so wanted in order to provide jobs for members of our community and to the hundreds of people, and I hope all of you, who visit there to partake in these activities. And your support and passage of this memorial will help us reinvigorate the efforts being put forth by our delegation in Washington. There are a couple of very small minor changes that I inadvertently made, or mistakes that I inadvertently made. On the memorial itself, it calls attention to the port of Tillamook Bay. Actually, the one where the jetties are, even though it's all one bay, is the port of Garibaldi. And if the chair and the committee would be willing, those changes could be made on the Senate side, where Senator Dukes has indicated that she would certainly be willing to do that. So I thank you for your attention, and that's really all I have to say. Unless you want to stay a lot longer, I can think of more to say.
Any questions? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and Representative Hobson, I really do appreciate you're bringing this matter to the committee. As another coastal legislator, I empathize with what happened in your district. And I believe that while it's very hard sometimes for us to anticipate these kinds of tragedies, they hit home so much to people all up and down the Oregon coast. And I'm very supportive of this memorial, and I appreciate your bringing it to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger. That's very much appreciated by everyone, the outpouring of interest, concern, love, and affection that came to our community during this time was really quite amazing, up to and including people from clear across the country, as it did indeed make the national news. That's always not necessarily the way we want to do that, but it does show the connection that so many people have.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hobson, can you tell us a little bit of the process of how this is going to go through Congress and where it's at right now and what's happened so far?
My understanding right now, it is with our delegation, and it is proposed to be included in part of the budgets for the 2005. It's looking to the future. There was a grant or an appropriation of about $300,000 a couple of years ago that really spent time, energy, and effort on surveying the needs of the jetties. There are actually two right now. And you may have read in the paper there was some concern for dredging and that there probably or might have been a need for dredging. That was immediately assessed, and the determination was that the dredging wasn't in the main cause or even a highly contributing factor to that, but it didn't alleviate the need to do continued work on the jetty itself.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, a couple of comments. I grew up in Bandon, which sits right on the Coquille River, and the Coquille River itself can be pretty treacherous in the way of the jetty, and I know a number of ships coming into or going out of the Coquille River have had trouble. So I very much appreciate the importance of maintaining and repairing these jetties. Secondly, I'm pleased to see that Representative Hobson made it today on time for the hearing.
All right, anything else? Great, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, sir.
No one further here to testify. We'll close the public hearing on HJM 10. We'll open up a work session on HJM 10.
Mr. Chair, I move HJM 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Joint Memorial 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. All right, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Well, fine.
Ms. Annie Flores.
Aye.
Ms. Annie Mona Sampson.
Aye.
Ms. Annie Griffin.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and we'll ask Representative Hobson to carry this. And that concludes our work session on HM 10. And colleagues, we are seeing no further business today. Ask you, though, please to check in with our main committee administrator, Kara, if looking at schedules for tomorrow, if we need to have us come in for something. So just staying flexible. Anyway, without anything further, we are adjourned.